From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It can be tough enough to make life work when work is 9 to 5. But when work is all over the clock, piecemeal, makeshift, last-minute shifts and changes, no regularity, it can be almost impossible. But that's where a lot of American work has been headed, especially low-wage work, where workers have the least cushion to work from. It's boosting profits, but breaking home lives. And then there's straight-up freelance. This hour On Point, making do, juggling hours in our makeshift economy. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is this your life? Shifts all over the clock, last-minute changes, running at a moment's notice for TaskRabbit jobs. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPointRadio. Joining me first today from Sacramento, California, is Ann Huff Stevens. She's the director of the Center for Poverty Research at the University of California, Davis, professor and chair of the Department of Economics there. She studies low-income workers and labor markets. Ann Huff Stevens, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Sure. Great to be here.
We've been hearing about this for a long time, and then there was a big story in the New York Times not long ago about a Starbucks barista who was scrambling all over the place. She had worked at Dollar Tree stores and worked at KFC, got to Starbucks, and was on this kind of wild schedule where she never knew until the last minute what shifts she'd be working. She might work closing and then opening shifts just a few hours apart. She couldn't figure out anything for her child care. She couldn't go to school. She couldn't even take the time to learn how to drive. It sounded like kind of hell on earth, hell on wheels, trying to live and respond to this moving target of work hours. How common is this these days, Ann?
I think it's much more common, and this is something that a lot of social scientists who study low-income workers have noted for a decade or more, and it's been going on longer than that. It's a big problem when you try to think about the challenges of running your life, managing a family, making ends meet when you're only finding out your work schedule a few hours in advance and it's subject to change. It's a big challenge, and I think we're finally starting to see a little bit of attention to this.
I mean, I've punched a clock plenty over the years, and, you know, shifts always moved around some. But you generally knew, I work this shift, I work that shift, and it would be that case for weeks at a time. What kind of short notice, quick changes are people up against now, and why?
Well, I think you hear all sorts of stories, and I think it's very common to have, you know, 24 hours or less notice of a schedule change. We know that at some companies, workers will show up for a shift, but maybe there aren't as many customers as they expected, and so they just get sent home. I think the reason this is becoming more common is because it's another way in which changes in technology are really impacting workers. This is different, though, than the usual stories we hear. Now what's happened is we now have fairly sophisticated software where instead of a manager sitting down with a piece of paper and a grid and scheduling workers, you can now sort of plug in all of your workers and your hours and your needs into software, and it will spit out a schedule. And firms like this, because they can sort of squeeze by on as few workers as possible and cover all their shifts, the problem is that sometimes the needs of the workers and the challenges they face haven't been incorporated into this planning software.
And the software doesn't appear to give a hoot about whether it's a humane combination of shifts or not, or whether it's a full slate of hours or not. It's maximizing, I guess, profit for the company, but without the kind of concern a manager might just naturally have.
I think that's absolutely right. I think this is a new thing, and it seems to me that much of the software is perfectly capable of also including constraints on the workers' side and what their preferences might be. But we haven't really seen that yet, and I think that's one direction that this might go ultimately.
We had Amanda Marcotte writing this all up in Slate. She talked about Jody Cantor's piece in the Times, detailing the latest fresh hell visited upon low-wage workers by their corporate bosses' erratic work schedules created by software that choreographs workers in precise, intricate ballets using sales patterns and other data to figure out how many hands are needed on deck at any hour of the day. They cut labor costs, but it's at the expense, Amanda wrote, of workers who don't know when and how many hours they'll be working, often only have notice, very short notice, schedule a couple days ahead of time, maybe leaving them in a constant scramble to figure out how to work out childcare and other life obligations. If you're in a low-wage job, you don't have much cushion to face that kind of moving window of work with, Anne.
That's right. I mean, I think finding childcare, much less affordable childcare, is challenging enough if you can if you're looking for childcare from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. But I think when you get outside of that range, and certainly when it goes from needing childcare at 8 a.m. on Tuesday to 5 p.m. on Thursday, it's very hard for a lot of families to do that. And certainly the less income you have, the less flexibility you have in how you can make those last-minute arrangements.
We saw this 22-year-old Starbucks barista written up here, single mother, trying to work it out with a family and relatives to take care of her child. Even they, who, you know, they're family, and they got exasperated because they were also prisoners, in effect, to the uncertainty, the chaotic kind of changeability of her schedule. They couldn't be on standby all the time, and yet that's what's asked. It was so devastating to read how this tore into a low-income worker's life. Starbucks has announced since that they're revising their policies to end those irregular schedules for their 130,000 baristas. That's big change at one company, but is this generally still in wide use, Anne?
I think it happens in many, many companies now. The sort of optimistic bit, as you were just alluding to, of that story is that once it was all, now, of course, every company is not going to be written up in the New York Times, but, you know, once there was this level of awareness brought to the problem, the company did respond. And I think part of the issue is that companies are not quite thinking through the implications for workers. And this is a type of issue that economists are always very interested in, because what happens is the cost savings from the scheduling software, the reduced labor cost, those are immediate and very concrete. What is harder to get companies to incorporate but may eventually happen is that there may also be cost of scheduling like this in terms of higher turnover, less productive workers because they're less happy and less comfortable with their jobs. But those costs are sort of diffuse and sometimes take time to accumulate. And so I think just raising awareness and getting companies to think about the implications of how they're doing the scheduling and their shift work is at least a start. It's not enough, but it's a beginning.
And then in the economy we've just come through, and many are still in, there was very little leverage on the workers' part. A lot of freelance sort of digital job markets rose up, TaskRabbit and others. We'll look at those too. Ann Hub Stevens, please stand by in Sacramento, California. Lots of callers on this front. Todd in American Falls, Idaho. Todd, thanks for calling. What's your experience?
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
20 years experience with Monsanto Company in St. Louis, Missouri. I used to work at one of the plants in Idaho, and we experienced an extremely amount of worker turnover.
Why? What happened, Todd? Was it a scheduling issue, a software issue, what?
Yes, it was a scheduling issue. We incorporated a software program that was originally started in Germany. It's called SAP.
Yep.
And the workforce decrease was almost 500 employees.
Why? And why were they so unhappy about the scheduling with this software?
Well, the software showed them different areas of incorporating cost savings, and they were able to eliminate those jobs due to scheduling and procurement. And there was a lot of disgruntled employees because of what was going on, because it was a lot of change, but it was also a lot of innovation. They got to hand it to the Germans. They are thinkers, and so they go outside of the box and make this happen. And what we found was that the people who had the experience, they also give them the tools to manage their work situation a whole lot better. What we ended up doing was not only did we operate the plant, but when it come time to make major repairs, we were also the maintenance people as well, so we did a dual role.
And did this involve this kind of random, irregular hours, or was it other sorts of efficiencies?
The efficiency was switching from a 3-schedule, 8-hour shift to a 2-schedule, 12-hour shift with the same amount of employees. And what happened was that we would work 4 days and have 4 days off and stick to that schedule.
That doesn't sound necessarily so bad. Why did so many people get upset and leave?
I don't know. It was the older ones. Well, I was caught in the middle. I was in my mid-30s, and the disgruntlement was those who had been there 20-plus years and were used to an 8-hour schedule, and they didn't like the 12s.
Todd, I appreciate your call from American Falls, Idaho. Ann Huff-Stevens, this is a generational thing. Despite this 20-something, 22-year-old that the Times wrote up, maybe older workers just aren't accustomed to it. Maybe younger workers won't mind?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always hard to change the way a workplace has been organized, and workers are often going to resist that. But I think the issue today is one that is applying more to all workers, and it's especially strong in certain segments, particularly in retail and sales and service jobs, where you do have this flow of customers in and out at different times. It's especially tempting to try to use this new way of, you know, really matching your workforce with exactly your customer demand in a very tight way. And I don't think it's generational necessarily.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the freelance economy. We'll look more at that. The just-in-time work schedules that have become ever more prevalent. Piecemeal work at any hour of the day. And the new struggle for consistency and work-life balance when workers' leverage is pretty small, especially in low-wage work, looking at making do in this makeshift, shifting shift economy. Ann Huff-Stevens is with us. She's director of the Center for Poverty Research at University of California, Davis, with us from Sacramento today. Here's one of these software scheduling companies, Kronos Scheduling Technology. Here's an ad. Companies like Starbucks use this kind of software to create work schedules that have been sometimes all over the place for their employers. Here's the pitch for companies.
Kronos Workforce Scheduler is a complete automation solution that does more than bring order to scheduling chaos. By providing an easier way to manage the unpredictable and make more effective staffing decisions, Workforce Scheduler gives you the power to control labor costs, improve productivity, and minimize compliance risks.
Bring order to scheduling chaos. But does that mean for the workers? It can be pretty tough on families where hours are all over the place, part-time, seasonal, all over the clock. Here's Tiana Turner, talked about that and her family with USA Today.
We are the working, as they say, the working poor. I would say that's what we are. You know, we work constantly, but yet it seemed like we still struggle. You know, once you begin working, you lose a lot.
Particularly if you don't know when you're going to be working on any particular day until that day is almost upon you. And we have lots of callers. I want to get their stories. Reed in Polk, Ohio. Reed, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are y'all today?
Well, what's your story?
Well, I used to work down in Victoria, Texas. I worked for a oil field company down there. And see, they gave us these company phones, and we never knew when it was going to go off. We were basically on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, we had times when we would go on a job, we'd work 12-hour days. I'd get on the road heading to the house, and as soon as I got to the house, I had times where I didn't even get out of the vehicle because my phone would ring, and I'd have to go right back to work.
So you were expected, whenever the phone rang, just to turn around and go to work?
That was it. I mean, basically, as soon as the phone went off, we had to turn right back around and go back to the work. And like I said, we were operating heavy equipment out in the oil field, driving 18-wheelers with who knows how much equipment on the back of them out to these job site locations. And we would work 8 to 12 hours a day just on one location. We had times when the phone would go off before we had even finished rigging everything down from that job, and they'd have another one for us lined up already.
Reed, let me ask you, back in the day I did oil field work. It was long and hard, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, but it was regular hours. Why do you think your company went to this, hey, you know, sort of popcorn thing, the phone could pop off anytime and we want you there? Why?
I don't know exactly why they went to that. I know I think part of it had to do with the lack of people at the company that I was working for. They had a very low retention rate for employees. I mean, we had guys that they would start up with the company, they'd stay there for probably 2 or 3 months, and they'd leave. But those of us that did stay, we stayed for several years, if not made a career out of it. And I decided finally, after having enough of it, to leave the company because I couldn't handle the hours anymore.
Reed, I appreciate your call. That image of the phone in your pocket that could ring any time and you're expected immediately to be at work will stick with me. And we know that this is turned into kind of a profit center for companies because I guess they can just only throw labor at the work they've got when they really, really have it. You know, so there's no time when someone's there, but there's not that much work. There's just sort of hanging out. But surely it's a problem for them, too, if their staff can't handle their home and family obligations, or maybe it's not in.
Yeah, I think in the long run, it is likely to be a problem. And that the last caller made a point that he, when he could, he finally left that job because it just wasn't it wasn't a good work environment. I think this is sort of what I had in mind when I was mentioning, you know, there may be costs associated with these policies, but they may be harder to measure in the short term. It may be that you see, you know, greater worker turnover, or, you know, another thing that can happen is, if the workers are this sort of stressed out, you may start to see worse customer service down the road. But these things are going to take time to filter through. And I think, initially we just have to get firms to take a look at, you know, I loved the ad for the software. It's talking about how it can solve all the problems. But I think, you know, many of us know that the software involves someone who's using the software, too. And so I think that can't really be the ultimate solution, as the ad mentioned. But the managers have to look at what the software is doing and still be thoughtful about it.
There's another side to this, a new kind of world of freelance work, online digital markets for jobs to be done, TaskRabbit and others. We've talked about that on this show, what it's like when someone can say, hey, I'll give you whatever, $20 to move this wood off my porch, and I'll give you $50 to move these bags of cement, whatever it might be. It can drive what you get paid down pretty low. But if you're trying to put together a living in that world, it can also put you on a pretty crazy schedule. Brad Stone is with us right now. And please stand by. Brad is with us from San Francisco, senior writer for Bloomberg Business Week, author of The Everything Store, Jeff Bezos and the Age of Amazon. Did a recent piece on work-life balance. It was called Work-Life Balance and the New Night Shift. He's also lived the life of a tasker for 3 days with TaskRabbit and wrote about it. Brad Stone, thanks for joining us. What's happening with our economy that's making this kind of, for the worker, chaotic work schedule, work life, so much more prevalent?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, well, I think a couple of things are happening. You know, one, it may just be a function of the economy. You know, companies hold all the cards right now. There's a surplus of labor. The unemployment rate is still high, 6 or 7%. The decline of unions over the past few decades, leaves workers unprotected. So, companies, you know, even if they abuse their employees, even if a conscientious company like Starbucks makes life pretty difficult for its employees, you know, they can be secure in the fact that if somebody leaves, there's going to be a line out the door to fill that spot. And certainly in my reporting on Amazon, where the conditions in those big fulfillment centers are difficult at best during the holidays, you know, can be pretty brutal. You know, they have their pick of people because, you know, they operate in parts of the country where there are a lot of labor options. People want those jobs. I think the other thing that's happening is the state of global competition where companies, you know, are battling it out with rivals from around the world. It's the nature of business, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so, you know, they have to, if they want to be customer focused and meet the demand that's now at their door, they have to push their employees. The TaskRabbit stuff, what we call out here in the Bay Area, the micro economy, is a little different, this piecemeal work that you can pick up on the internet. I think, you know, two things. One, on the low end, it's probably a good thing. You know, for the unemployed, they could be sitting at home twiddling their thumbs.
Right.
But if they want to make some money, they log on, they go weed someone's garden or drive an Uber car, and they can make a pretty good living. The worry, I guess, is on the other end that you're siphoning away otherwise well-protected jobs that came with benefits. That, you know, someone who's working for Yellow Cab with maybe some health insurance, a decent living, and some stable or at least predictable hours, you know, the Yellow Cabs of the world are imperiled by the Ubers and the Lyfts, and, you know, and those jobs don't have the same protection. So it's something that, you know, this is the microeconomy. It's still in the very early stages, and these companies are battling it out amongst themselves, and they haven't really figured out how to provide those traditional protections to their employees.
There's the protections, the bennies that might not be there, but also just the hours. If you really try and put together a living with this piecemeal microeconomy, you can have little bits of jobs all over the place. You'd sort of be running hither and thither like an idiot, trying to put together enough to make a living. That it sounds like you may have enough to put food on the table, but also an ulcer.
Yeah, I can definitely testify to the idiot part. For a story in Business Week, I decided to join the microeconomy for a week, and I cleaned houses, I gardened, I broke down boxes for TaskRabbit, I washed cars for a company that pretty soon afterward went out of business. It was called Cherry. Someone could order a car wash via app, and people would show up to the car, even if it's by the side of the street, and wash it. And then on the last day, I ran errands for a company called Postmates. I did make a pretty good wage that week. I think it was about $100 a day. The thing that was so stressful was the way in which the software kind of measures you. So when I was running deliveries for Postmates and getting sandwiches for people, you would see the timer on your phone, and the sort of implicit challenge was, you know, you gotta go and fulfill this demand in half an hour or 45 minutes. If you're on your bike or in a car navigating through traffic, it's actually not easy. So by the end of the week, I gotta say I was far more exhausted than a week spent slaving away at the computer.
Of course, on the other side of that equation, this online service is getting little jobs that need to be done. And here's a little ad where TaskRabbit is saying, hey, come on, you got a little thing you need to be done? Just tell us about it. We'll have somebody out to do it.
It seems like the only way to stay on top of everything and have a life is to find another you, or add an extra 8 or 10 hours to your day. That's probably not going to happen. But what if it could? Enter TaskRabbit. TaskRabbit is an online and mobile service that helps you get stuff done, so you can take back your time for the things you enjoy.
Yeah, the things you enjoy, but the people who are jumping for all those tasks. And, of course, there's the just the crazy scheduled world, too. This was on Black Friday last year. Walmart workers around the country protesting their wages and working conditions. They've been up against some of the scheduling software as well. Here's one.
It's important that we be able to afford things for our families, because it's not only me, it's workers around the nation that's experiencing the same thing that I am.
Alexandria writes to us about these wild schedule shifts all over the place. It sucked the life and health out of me. I could never see family or friends when I wanted to. Abel says, seems like modern slavery to me. Barbara writes to us, this is on Facebook, I'm a mental health provider and have had clients leave treatment they need because they cannot commit to a regular appointment time due to their erratic schedule. Whoever thought that was a good idea? Yes, she writes, the folks at the top making the large salaries, well, they're supposed to maximize. Kirk in Groton, Connecticut. Kirk, you're on. What's your story?
Hi, thanks, Tom, for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was working two jobs, one for a deli and another in a restaurant. I could never coordinate with both jobs, you know, when I would be working. They would sometimes schedule me for six-hour shifts that would overlap each other. The next day, I'd only be working 2 hours for each job. It was never, never anything I could actually set as a concrete schedule. And it ended up leading me to being fired in both jobs. I'd never been fired before in my life up until this recently. And, you know, I'm recently married. I just, you know, I have a newborn son. And it's been really tough. I've actually started doing, you know, finding work online, finding, you know, jobs on Craigslist. You know, somebody needs their yard done. So I go and do that, and I'm, you know, running all over the state of Connecticut, sometimes going to Rhode Island or Massachusetts even, just to try and get a day's work in. And I got to tell you, the new way the companies are scheduling, it's crazy for people. Like, it's absolutely nuts.
Kirk, it sounds like a very tough road, and we wish you luck and maybe something a little more steady. I hope you find it. Thanks for calling. NF Stevens, Bradstone, standby. Allison Santana is with us right now from Chester, Pennsylvania. She was a Starbucks barista for a couple of years and had kids at home and was grappling with all this. Allison, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Did you run into this erratic scheduling problem, and what impact did it have on you?
Absolutely. I've been working with Starbucks for 2 years. I started at the company as a barista. I had childcare subsidized, but because the fluctuation of hours, I wasn't able to maintain my subsidized. So the impact ultimately that it's had on me is not being able to provide stable childcare for my kids day to day. I'm not having a regular work experience like most people just want to have. I'm pretty much at the mercy of, you know, erratic scheduling.
Did you ask Allison for a regular schedule? Was that an option in your time at Starbucks?
I've been asking for a regular schedule since I started there. It's always a case of, well, there's not enough labor, or we'll see what we can do. Ultimately, my requests were ignored, and I've no matter how many conversations or suggestions I've made about my scheduling, it hasn't changed. And, you know, it's not just for me, although it presents its own challenges when you're a parent, a whole other set of challenges. Everybody's having this problem. It affects everybody.
Aaron writes to us on Facebook, says, nothing like closing and then opening, or third shift into first shift, two different days technically, but literally back to back, or maybe just a few hours in between. Did you see that at Starbucks in your time there, Allison?
Pretty much everybody I know has experienced the closing, then coming in early morning for an opening. Yes, I've seen that happen countless times.
I mean, I'm reading here that you had to commute to work using two buses.
At one point, when I didn't have a car this winter, which the winter was extremely harsh that just passed.
Yep.
I had to get up as early as 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning to walk my kids to the sitter's house, then to go to the bus stop and wait, get on one bus, wait for another bus, get on that bus, and be at work to open or be second in. It's just very unreasonable requests sometimes that are being made on workers.
Do you see a way out of it for you, Allison? What's the way out of this?
For me, originally, what the way out of it was going to be was I was going to come to Starbucks, I was going to work hard, I was going to prove myself and gain a promotion and ultimately a career. Do I see a way out of it right now? I'm not 100% sure. So many people are having this problem as far as, you know, being at the mercy of these low-wage jobs, the unpredictable scheduling. And the one thing I want to say, though, is Starbucks is such an influential company. They're known for their integrity. And they can be the leader in this situation. I do believe that things need to change, and they can change. Will they? I mean, we have to put the pressure on, you know, companies to change.
Well, Starbucks, for one, has announced that they will end irregular schedules for its baristas. Maybe that will mean change elsewhere. Allison Santana, we really thank you for joining us for a few minutes today, and we wish you the best. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the freelance economy, the just-in-time work schedules, piecemeal work that have become so common, and the new struggle for consistency and work-life balance when workers' leverage is pretty small and wages, too. We're talking about making do, really, in a makeshift economy. With Brad Stone, senior writer for Bloomberg Businessweek, he's written about the tasker life, and Ann Huff Stevens, director of the Center for Poverty Research at University of California, Davis, with us from Sacramento, California. Let's hear from our listeners. Lots of them with experience here. John in Austin, Texas. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So I actually have a pretty fortunate, I don't have a erratic schedule, but I do work for a sort of TaskRabbit app in Austin that we run errands. And I also have a part-time job. And I'm also a full-time student. And next week. School's about to start up again, and I took on this errand running job to make up some money on the side to help pay back my student loans. And it's great when the money's great, but I often am very worried at the end of the day. Wow, I worked for 4 or 5 hours driving around. I didn't make that much money. What am I going to do? I don't get paid from my other part-time job, for another 2 weeks or another week. What am I going to do? And so I definitely find myself maybe not physically stressed, from running around. That's not the stressful part, but I definitely feel the pressures of trying to make it with a part-time job and then, basically a tip-based errand running job as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to figure out what's new here and what's not. Making a living has never been a snap, but when leverage is so low and scheduling's all over the place, it can get out there to the limits of what people can do. It sounds like you're managing, John, but it sounds tough. Let me get one more. Thank you, John. Bowling Green, Kentucky. JT, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me today. Love your show.
Thank you. What do you know?
Just a little background on myself. I'm 25 years old. I have two beautiful young little girls.
Good for you.
By day, I work for a national company. I deliver transfer truck parts. I usually average about 400 miles a day, and at any given time, I have about $10,000 of merchandise in the back of my truck.
Okay.
But I can't make enough doing that. I have to work two jobs, so by night, I go and I clean bathrooms and cafeterias and toilets in the factory.
Yep.
And I am struggling in every way imaginable. I am struggling financially, emotionally, physically, and mentally. And I think it's more than just a problem with scheduling in the United States. I think the pay scale is backwards. Seems like the people who don't really work hard and jobs aren't so meaningful get paid a high amount of money, and the people who are out here working hard and have a ton of responsibilities get paid low wages. And I'm not talking about our McDonald's jobs.
Yeah.
In the job I do, if my job don't get done and parts don't get delivered, transfer trucks don't get fixed, and millions of places could be put on hold because they're not getting the things they need. And I think it's just the people who could really make a difference, which are the people who make the high salaries, don't care because they're making what they got to have.
And there you are up against it, and with two little beautiful little girls at home to take care of, which means the pressure is on to get. I mean, you've just got to get it done. JT, I wish you luck with it, and I really appreciate you calling in. Anne Huff Stevens, people have always had to work, and people work hard, but you hear JT's struggle with it, and it's kind of heartbreaking.
Right. I mean, I think he really highlights something that is really in the background of all of this conversation that's been going on for a long time, which is that at the near the bottom or below the median, and certainly at the 25th, at the bottom 25% of wage earners, real earnings have not increased substantially in 30 or 40 years. And in some parts, depending on where you start measuring, they've actually declined. And this is why these workers at the bottom have very little power and are increasingly having to put together multiple jobs, which makes these scheduling issues even more difficult to cope with. But this is sort of a long-term trend that I think has been going on for so long. We sometimes forget about it, but it's really a key part of the problem and why this is such an issue for so many workers.
Breadstone, you hear JT, who's driving all over the place, plus cleaning up at night. And it's tough. What about you're in San Francisco. What about in the tech world where it may not be low wage, but it may still be crazy hours and crazy demands?
Right. In different ways for different jobs. I think those kinds of jobs, of course, exist here in the Bay Area. I mean, the truly tragic thing here is that the tech economy has created such competition for resources, driven up the price of homes, that those low or middle income workers can't even afford to live here, so they end up taking jobs here, but then living, 30 to 60 miles away. On the other end of the spectrum, and here we're getting into the sort of plaintive complaints of the overachieving white collar workers.
Okay.
I think on that end of the spectrum, people are also working harder than ever. I recently wrote this story about, as you mentioned before, the new night shift, and it's it's this sense among, you know, maybe over-entitled employees that you're now expected to work at night, that it's no longer extracurricular. That you
mean at home, after dinner,
yeah,
whatever.
That's mm-hmm. right, and it's because there's email to answer, because your boss is online, because, you know, everyone's competing and overachieving and trying to succeed in this new economy. And I think that, you know, I think the what your caller just expressed in some ways is felt by everyone up and down this economy, that there's really no break, that we're all moving as fast as we can. And even when we take a vacation, you come back and you have to pay your dues by working extra hard to make up for lost time.
Yeah, I mean, there's challenging and then there's challenging. I guess it's a little easier if at least the income is higher, but it may be not so different in terms of lifestyle. Let me get one more right here from Austin, Texas. Paul, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, I'm a physician in Austin, and I provide anesthesia, and I was just commenting that we provide service at all hours of the day, and this morning I got called and laying in bed asleep, said, hey, we need you right now. I run to work, and then I'm off for a few hours, and then I'm going back to work an overnight shift, and my whole practice of 60 or 70 docs and nurse anesthetists works in a similar manner. It's just, I think that's the way it works in healthcare, and sounds like it's kind of going out to other parts of the economy.
So in a way, Paul, I suppose people might say, well, Dr. Paul, you knew what you were signing up for, and you've got it, and you're probably compensated pretty well. How's it work for a living?
Yeah, completely. But I think, you know, I have the opportunity, if I don't like the way that my life is, I can get a job doing something and make less. And I think that's the danger out here, is a lot of people are they can't get a job that makes less. But it's a lifestyle, you know. I listening to your show, I mean, that's the lifestyle of all kinds of surgeons I work with and nurses that work at the hospital, and they get called in the middle of the night at 3 a.m, and then they're expected to work at 7 a.m.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We know those stories, and we know it is tough. I don't know if you're talking with somebody who's making minimum wage, how strong their sympathy will be, but yet on the lifestyle part, the work life balance, they'll surely understand that. I appreciate your call, Paul. And here's a hard-nosed listener online who writes, so what's wrong with working yourself to death? Billions of people around the earth make a living doing so, and people have done so since humanity began walking upright. Hard-nosed to say the least, but that, you know, there's that attitude out there that, well, look, working's tough.
Yeah, I think, you know, many, many people, especially in the U.S., I think work hard and work a lot of hours. I think what we need to recognize is that for workers at the bottom, it's one thing to work hard. And then it was interesting that the one caller said, you know, I work really hard in erratic hours, but then occasionally I get a vacation. I think when you're working erratic hours and piecing together a living and there's no paid vacation, and in fact, in most of these jobs, there's no paid or even unpaid sick time, I think the level of stress and struggle is an entirely different thing than in professions where you may have known that becoming a physician or a surgeon, you were likely to get calls in the middle of the night. So I think we do need to think a little bit about, you know, what if someone has this crazy life where they're working themselves to death, and as a result of it, they can't even earn enough to get above the poverty line. I think that's something we at least need to recognize as we've sort of trimmed back the safety net, required work with essentially all of our welfare programs. I think we just want to recognize that it's not as easy as just saying get a job. You may need to get two or three, and still that may not even work.
Yeah, surely we can fine-tune a little bit here. I mean, and then you can even be pushed down in that poverty hole. Scott writes to us, you know, reminding us, his child care is often charged by the day, not the hour. So a part-time worker that gets sent home, we all, you know, rescheduled, don't need you, is actually in the hole for that. And pretty soon that can mount up. Mumbali is calling from Williamsburg, Virginia. Mumbali, you're on the air.
Tom, thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Well, Tom, I'm in the Navy, and I can only speak for the Navy and not the general military.
Okay.
But I as part of your duty, the military generally does require some flexibility, you know, because
of course.
So that way you can be able to respond to any kind of situation around the world. But in the Navy, I say things generally work on schedule. There's a lot of planning that goes around to to do even some of the most simple missions. You know, there's planning and more planning. And there's also something called small unit leadership. Generally in the Navy, I'm a seaman, and I work under a chief. And these chiefs are supposed to be able to know the individual, know what's going on in their lives, if they have kids or anything like that. That way they can, because as a warfighter, before you have been sent out to go execute any kind of mission or anything, your mind, you're required, your mind has to be on the job, because some of the stuff we do is really, really risky.
So, Mumbali, what about your schedule? Do you get your, are you scheduled very far ahead so you can normally at least plan your life, anticipate what's going on?
Well, right now, I'm in what they call a type 2 short duty. So, basically, C duty, type 2 C duty. So you do have kind of a fixed schedule on things.
And at least you've got a fixed schedule. Things could blow up, but regularly you've got a fixed schedule. And if it's well planned, that can work for the whole operation. Mumbali, I appreciate that perspective. I wonder if it has to be this erratic, if there were a little more weight put on the implications for individual lives, maybe that could be accounted for and still have efficiency. Let me get Jonathan from Boston on right here. Jonathan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Yeah. Big time fan. I myself have been 10 years working in a retail shop. I'm actually currently the general manager at a shop.
Yeah.
I've been on both sides of the spectrum with an erratic schedule when we began, and now we've transferred into a more solid schedule.
Okay.
And one thing I've seen through my employees is back when we used to have these erratic schedules, scheduling almost 1 week ahead at most, yes, in the retail that allows you to then cut hours here or there, but you were having a lot of employees coming in and just rotating out. You would always end up with somebody new. Time lost in training, time lost in people just not being productive. When you have something retail where you have to have these long hours, if you can give some semblance of a structure on the schedule, I saw a lot of my employees much more active, more proactive, happier. Now, as a general manager at the moment in the store, I will say I've had various employees I've had to let go because they push on coming in a little bit later or a little bit leaving a little bit earlier than they should.
Yeah.
But having a set schedule, I feel, brings more productivity. I'm a store that during the fall time, I'm doing a substantial amount of volume. I'm seeing $200,000 to $300,000 go through my doors in retail.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of activity.
So you're saying you've tried the irregular scheduling and you've tried regular, and what? You're migrating back away from erratic and toward regular.
Pretty much. I've managed to have now, I have two of my employees that happen to have two jobs of their own volition. We schedule around their job, but I managed to then know ahead of time, holidays are coming. I'm going to need you these hours. Can you do it?
Yeah.
I get to plan, and I know I can expect there's going to be enough support. I know what to expect. I can plan my wages even, because I know I will be looking at a certain amount of hours during that month, and I lose less money by not having to last minute fill somebody in to add extra hours because I need to give them more hours for the holidays.
Or yeah, something yeah. Jonathan, we've got it. Or because they've burned out and actually left your employ. It's so interesting. There's the voice of experience here right on the retail front, where this is very common. I mean, Breadstone, I wonder if there's a kind of limited elasticity here. If maybe employers begin to discover that there are limits to human flexibility. You know, there's no limit to what a software can do, but humans maybe do have some limits here. And if you accommodate some of those, you might end up with a more productive, predictable workforce.
I hope that's true. I mean, I want to be optimistic about that. I think most employers want to be conscientious. I think it would help quite a bit if it's something that their customers really look for. I mean, you know, we have, for the last 10 years, heard about, you know, Walmart's difficult labor practices, and I don't really feel like shoppers have reacted to that. You know, Walmart still does quite well. I would like to think, you know, that we live in a world where you know, shoppers look at wages and they look at how a company treats their employees. You know, a company like Starbucks, which is pretty progressive in its labor practices, or Costco, which is sort of famous for employees with long terms, well paid. They get paid $24, $25 an hour. If they got a lot of credit for that, I think the economy might be a little better for workers. You know, it's also maybe time to just lament the failure of organized labor and the wounds that were, you know, self-inflicted and otherwise, because that was the role of unions, to protect workers and to ensure that employers treated them fairly. And yet, you know, they really don't offer much in the way of protection anymore in most industries.
Well, we're eyes wide open here. Evidence so far suggests, as you say, people still shopping at Walmart in pretty strong numbers, but maybe awareness grows. Brad Stone at Bloomberg Businessweek, author of The Everything Store, Jeff Bezos and the Age of Amazon in San Francisco. Brad, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Ann Huff Stevens, got just a couple of seconds. Do you see the pendulum swinging back, or are we still out there in irregular land?
Well, I think I also would like to be optimistic that as firms discover that there are costs to some of these behaviors and tight scheduling, we may see them going back to thinking more about the workers. And
maybe.
We're
out of time right there, Ann. Ann F. Stevens, thank you so much for joining us. This is On Point.